Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net.
I'm Dr. Marty Gentius of Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, contributing editor Dr. David Delmonico interviews Dr. Father Jocelyn Gregoire, both of Duquesne University, about priests and sexuality, information and implications for counselors.
Hello, this is David Delmonico. I'm from Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and today I'm going to be spending some time talking with Dr. Father Jocelyn Gregoire. The topic today is counselors working with priests regarding sexual issues, and I've invited Dr. Gregoire to talk a little bit about that issue with me. And so I'd like to ask you, Dr. Gregoire, if you could introduce yourself a little bit.
Well, as you said, Jocelyn Gregoire, I come from Mauritius. That's why my French accent. And I've been a priest for the past 21 years, working as a missionary in Papua New Guinea for 7 years, and now at I've been at Duquesne for the past 12 years.
Okay. And what do you do here at Duquesne?
I'm working in the School of Education, in the Counseling Department, one of your colleagues.
Yes.
And I enjoy what I'm doing.
Good. So it's kind of a unique opportunity to have father, priest, counselor, educator, as well as to give us some different angles, from especially around the issue of sexuality.
I think it's needed in our field. I think it's needed. I think your experience yourself with giving workshop around meeting priests in different dioceses, you know how sometimes it's difficult to talk about this issue of sexuality. And I think something like that is very important.
Yeah, it's difficult, I think, enough to talk about sexual issues in general. But then when you add kind of a religious group, and particularly we're going to talk about working with priests around their sexual thoughts, feelings, fantasies, and behaviors, I think it adds another dimension to that.
That's true. And, I'm a Catholic priest, and I think I got my formation as a priest when I was in the seminary, maybe still with this Augustinian kind of belief and philosophy around sexuality. He was so afraid of the whole thing and interpreting the sin from Adam and Eve as a kind of a sexual sin. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of fear put in the theology and the philosophy and of the Catholic kind of formation of priesthood. And I think that's how we grew up. So when I was growing up in a parish where priests had been formed from before the Vatican II, of course, everything that has to do with morality revolves around sexuality. So masturbation was something, a big issue. Looking at a woman a little bit with some kind of desire in your heart, that's another big issue. So much so that when you get into the formation as a seminarian, one of the big recommendations is keep away from women. Mm-hmm. Keep away from women. Just kind of quit looking, quit thinking, quit dreaming.
Right, right. Which may not be the healthiest way to deal
with
it.
Which I think is not the healthiest way to deal with issues. Because, you see, I believe, and I think this is what every counselor need to understand, is that there is a real vocation. To become a priest is a real calling. It's a calling from God. And not everybody can respond to that. Not everybody can become priest. And I believe, as a counselor, let's say I'm not a priest, but I'm just a counselor for the time being, working with somebody who is a priest. My role is not to judge whether his calling is authentic or not. If he has come to the point of being ordained, I have to still take it that, yes, he responded to a true vocation. Now, how he's reconciling his ordinary life as a man, as a human being, as a human person, with the calling, this is the issue that needs to be worked on.
Right. So one of the things that I hear is that when you become a priest, you don't become non-human.
Exactly. You're not immune from all these, we put that between quotes, this immoral kind of issues that maybe the church is seeing. For example, attraction to a beautiful woman.
Right.
And saying Mass and you see this lady in front of you with her cleavage, I must be made of marble in order not to be insensitive to that. Yeah. But it's what I do with that thought, what I do with these feelings. This is something that maybe, if I have difficulty, I need help with.
Right.
The other thing that I think I need to be said at the onset is that our formation, like my formation as a priest in the seminary, there was nothing that kind of helped me deal with human sciences, like psychology or sociology or whatever. If there were courses on anthropology, it's to help me understand other cultures so that I can be a missionary there.
Right.
But in terms of my own personal sexuality, the way I appraise my body, the way I look at myself, the way I love myself, and the way this human person who is sexual in my entity, because that's how God made me, how am I going to relate with men, women, and children in that kind of a sexual context? And this is what we didn't get. We get theology, we get moral theology, fundamental theology, how to be in the church, how to preach, how to kind of scripture, how to bring morality to Christians. But we don't get something that makes us understand who we are, because I believe we are grounded. That's what the incarnation is all about.
Right.
I'm a human person, and this is that human person, like Paul would say, this is a kind of a vessel made, a earthen vessel, which is fragile. And in that earthen vessel, God has put his gift of calling me to be the priest. But I still remain the earthen vessel.
Right, right.
And I think help with that is how to make priests assume their entity, their identity as earthen vessels holding a treasure.
Interesting, because I think, you know, as you think about the training that you get, the formation that you go through, and certainly now with all of your knowledge about counseling, that not talking about sexuality, not exploring your own sexuality, not being given a venue to
yes.
be able to explore that is a message in and of itself.
That's right. And one of the things that I need to kind of to emphasize here, you see, I talk about the pre-Vatican mentality of towards sexuality, which kind of our Augustinian heritage. But after Vatican II, you hear it, the church is saying it, sexuality is a gift from God. You will hear priests preaching about sexuality as a gift from God. But we tell that to people, but we don't assume it for ourselves. How does our own sexuality become a gift of God for me?
Right.
So I think, again, there's this inconsistency that needs to be kind of addressed or confronted. How am I a priest? And let's take priest until now, thank God. Until now, we still have people who trust us.
Right.
And most of them are sometimes young women or women who are divorced, coming and talking about their issues, talking about their problem, and vulnerable person, all right? And this gives us a situation where people trust us, but it can also be a position of power. But what I need to understand is, how do I use that relationship, not as a domineering, not as something to be taken advantage of, but how can I use that relationship in order to really help somebody grow? Now, if I'm not comfortable with my own growth, I won't be able to do a good job. At the end of the day, I might say to the person, you know what? God loves you, which is true. The Spirit is with you, which is true. Jesus has forgiven you, which is true. But then I'm going back and think about, oh my goodness, this wonderful woman was with me all day, and all these feelings are coming out, and I don't know how to address it. I don't know how to do it. And I feel myself now later trying to want to see that person again to help.
Mm-hmm.
But in a sense, I'm doing my own kind
right.
of, my own personal job. So these are the kind of things that needs to be addressed, in the sense of how do you take care of your own sexuality?
Right.
I'm going to be blunt here. I'm let's say I'm counseling somebody as a priest. I'm counseling a woman, nice looking, attractive, and have an erection. Well, how do I explain that?
Right.
Now, even if this is provoked by this person in front of me, how do I live it and make it a healthy experience instead of something that is going to be burdening me with guilt and fear, and I want now to put a barrier, a distance. You see, how do I soothe my own sexuality and personality with who I am, knowing that I am earthen vessels and this is what God has chosen to do his work, and still be true and faithful to my vocation and to the person who has trusted his life or her life in me.
So, priests get erections.
Oh, of course, for God's sake.
I'm just kidding. But isn't that, I mean, that, first of all, let me just say that when you were talking, I was so struck by the parallels of what you were talking about with, as a priest sitting with a woman or someone in general that you're sexually attracted to, that the hierarchy in that relationship, the power that you can have in that relationship, the importance of having a good solid foundation in your own sexual understanding. These are all the same things that we teach counselors.
Exactly.
As they work through issues around sexuality, because they also are in a hierarchical relationship. They also have the potential to abuse the power in that relationship.
And true. And the difference between the counselors and the priest, though, is that the priest has more opportunities than counselors. Counselors need clients to come and pay, and then had to work building that trust.
Right.
Okay, and in that, within that relationship, we talk about the ethical issues of boundaries and dual relationship. But priest, naturally, every mass if you have five masses on a Sunday or on a weekend, at each mass, there's somebody will come and take your hand and say something. Father, can I see you? Can I say something to you? Can I hear? Right. Can I that? And it can be opportunity to kind of feel yourself well in a position of power and misuse this power for personal gain.
Right.
For personal gain. And I think this is where we are very vulnerable. This is where, because feelings, you were talking about priests having erection, priests have feelings. Priests are attracted to other people. Priests have kind of this kind of energy in them, this drive in them that makes them feel attracted to the opposite sex. And most of the time we know that I'm attracted to someone who doesn't belong to me. You know, who doesn't belong to me. That's not my calling. Now, maybe one of the things that counselors can do is really to help priests understand their calling. And if at the end, because God is not going to get mad at you, if, for example, after being a priest for a while, you find that I can't do that because I have a problem with my sexuality. I need a woman in my life. I need kids in my life. God is not going to be mad at you. It's better do it sincerely, clearly, instead of cheating behind and creating more trouble for yourself and for other people and for the church for whom you're supposed to witness to.
Let me ask you, from a counseling perspective, and if I was a counselor working with a priest, one of the things that I thought you were saying earlier is an important issue to address in a counseling session with the priest would be the disconnect.
Yes.
The sexual disconnect that in some ways we encourage, we support, we say this is what we want. We almost want priests to be
like that.
Asexual, without sexuality, because they're closer to God. They should be less sexual. Jesus was asexual. You know, we want to believe those things. And so one of the things as a counselor might be to help close that disconnect, to make that relation, you know, to make them be able to access or to help them access their sexuality.
Yes, yes. And I think that would be a tremendous service that counselors can render to priests, because there is a struggle. There is a struggle with loneliness, with solitude. There is a struggle with, even if you live in community, there is a struggle with living with men or, in case of nuns, women that you have not chosen to live with, because you made a vow, because you choose to become a priest, then you are put in a community and you have to make your life with that person, all right? And as we say, we are dealing with human person. Now, the person gets angry with me, and I say, well, he's just acting human. But the person feeling kind of attraction to something else, kind of dealing with having problem with his own sexuality, we say, no, you have to be.
Right.
You have
right.
to be. Just offer it to God here.
Right,
okay?
Go find
some place and meditate and pray
right.
and get the Holy yeah. Spirit to help you. I'm not kind of try to demean that process. I believe in prayer. I believe that the Holy Spirit is here to help us. I believe that God never calls us to do something that is beyond our capacity. All right? I believe very heartily in that, and that we can get the help from the mystical, the spiritual help in that sense. But I need also people around me. And you know, one of the languages that priests should understand is the language of the incarnation. God made man. God became man. It means man was there and then God became him. You see what I'm saying? So man was there. Man was there with all his limitation, finitude, with his immortality, with his mortality, his impurity, his sin. And God became that man. So man has to exist first before God can get incarnated. But I'm talking about the concept of incarnation. All right? Now, my life as a priest also, as well as my message that I have to preach, has to be incarnated, has to be rooted into the human experience, has to be grounded right. in that human experience. So it means I need to understand who I am first, right. to understand the message, the beauty of that message incarnating in me. I need to understand who you are, you, as Dr. Delmonico, to be able to come and then bring that beautiful message of peace and love to you, because I know where it's going to fit. You see what? It has to be incarnated. The language of incarnation is one powerful language that then brings us to understand that we need to do something about our humanity. And part of it is, with regard to this topic, is our sexuality. I think I've been saying that for a long time. Our seminaries need to be able to have formation about sexuality. And we don't do it as a reaction to the sexual abuse case, but we do it because it is a necessity for the sake of the human person.
Right,
if we want good priests around, we need to get priests who understand who they are as sexual beings.
Now let me ask you, you talked a little bit about the choosing and the calling to become a priest. I guess one of the questions I've often wondered, and I've worked quite a bit with priests in my own counseling experience, is that sometimes I do wonder if people have chosen this profession or felt they've been called to the profession as a way of escaping or avoiding kind of a pre-existing struggle that they have with their sexuality, because certainly in all Christian kinds of religions and other religions as well, but particularly the Catholic religion with its vow of chastity. In some ways, I've had priests tell me this directly, that I entered the priesthood because I thought it was a place that I could escape my sexuality. What do you think about that?
I think this is a very unhealthy reason to get into the priesthood. Okay. As I say, it's a very good question and a very good remark, because I think one of the things that we need to be aware is that, yes, being called the priesthood is a calling, but as I said, it's not for everybody. And some people do go there to escape situation. Now, it is a fact that countries where the situation, the economic situation is bad, there is a greater kind of number of young men who want to become a priest.
Right.
Because it's safe, economically you're okay, and you have a good life, all right? We've seen that with Poland, when Poland was communist, and how the vocation was kind of on the rise there. But with regard to the topic that interests us, yes, there are people, there are priests who enter the seminary as an escape from their own personal struggle with their sexuality, from the guilt of masturbation, from their some sexual deviation that they have.
Maybe homosexuality, attraction to children.
Exactly. Or pornography or something like that.
Right.
And the kind of, I would say, the unreasonable kind of idea there is that I go in the seminary, I'll be protected. I'm surrounded with people who are going to pray. I'm going to develop a prayer life. I'm going to develop a good relationship with God, and that will protect me from things. I think that's fine. This kind of mentality is okay, but God is not magic.
Right.
God is giving you responsibility to deal with your own issue. And I think, and that's why I come back again. Had we had, for example, a good human science program in our seminary formation, where we can address human growth and development, we can address human psychology, when we can address human sexuality. This is going to take care of these things, of these issues that people are coming and try to see seminary as an escapism,
right,
as a kind of scapegoat to hide from deeper issues that they need to work with. Because here's the thing. They get hidden and they get protected during the seminary formation. But then they will be out there.
Right.
And they will be out there more vulnerable than they were, and more fragile, and having at their kind of available for them a plethora of victims. That's where it becomes a big issue,
right,
for me.
Right.
That's where it needs to be addressed. And I think the time has come where clear and good discernment has to be made early on. Early on. I think we are talking about, there's a lack of priesthood. There's a kind of young people don't want to respond. And I would prefer that we continue on this lack and get quality than quantity, just kind of to fill seminary, just to be able to have an ordination every year in the diocese. Doesn't mean that we are ordaining the quality that needs to be helping God's people. You know, it's good for the ego. My diocese has got 2 priests ordained this summer. Or my diocese, I've got 5 to 10 seminarians. That's good for my ego, but what the quality?
Right, quality and
yes, and what and that's where discernment is very important. And I think now it's time that seminarians and like seminary formators, dioceses, bishops, and everything needs to tap into the resource that's out there: counselors, psychologists, and come and work with the seminarians. And there was a time when there was this big debate. Priesthood is a calling from God, as I said. So we can't have psychological testing to see whether this guy is fit or not.
Right, right.
So we are like we are playing God. I don't think so. I think God deals with the mystic in his mystic way, but gives us also, as human person, the responsibility to make the cut.
Right.
To discern what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is not good, and what is the best for the church and what is not the best for the church. And in order to do that, we tap into the resources that's around us. It would be foolish. It would be foolish not to do it, because afterwards it can come right into our face,
right,
and hit us.
It's interesting. One of the things that you talked about is that, you know, that there probably are people, just like in the counseling profession, in every profession, there are people who enter it for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've worked with priests who admittedly entered the profession and answered what they felt like was their calling in some ways to escape their sexuality.
Yes.
And it's worked very well for them. And they've performed very well, and they've done excellent work, and they've really made tremendous contributions. And as you know, one of my areas of of expertise and interest is the internet.
Yes, yes.
Then enters in internet. And all of a sudden, all of those controls that they were able to have in their lives and how functional their community had been and how helpful prayer and meditation had been to keep them away from prostitution or adult bookstores or wherever it was, now all of a sudden sits on their desktop at work.
Yes, that's the point. Because before, you know, we were talking of church, communal kind of institution, community, religious community, whether you choose the person you work with or not, but you still have people around you. And you're in charge of a parish, you still have people around
right.
you. So that aspect of the priestly life is already a deterrence for you to enter into kind of some kind of illicit kind of activity. Like before the internet, if I have to go, if I have an urge to go and watch a pornographic movie, I have to go to the theater to do that. Now, before getting to that theater, what will be my thing? Who is going to be watching me? And that will be a deterrence. I might not go because for fear that somebody might be seeing me there and then make a scandal with that. But now, with the outcome of the internet and everything, I am here confined in the solitary of my room. No one is going to check my desktop. It's personal thing. Even for religious who have made vows of poverty, we share everything. My laptop is my laptop. My computer is my computer.
Right.
You need to get in, ask for permission, and let me type the password, me. But
right.
you don't mess up with that.
Right.
And I make sure I'll get all, just in case, every time I visit a place, get my history clear. You
yes,
see what I'm saying?
Right.
So, in a sense, then, that's the vulnerability of it, because you're back alone again. Life has changed. Communication is better. Maybe it's more comfortable than it was 10 years, 20 years, 40 years ago. But you're faced with your own solitude and come back with the problem we were talking about. You get in for the wrong reason. You feel protected for a while, and then it comes back running to your face without you knowing what's going on.
Right, those vulnerabilities get magnified, I think.
Exactly. And I think maybe to kind of follow up on that, and I think this is where counselors can do a good job. Let me tell you what job they can do. You know, one of the big problem most of the time for priests who wants to quit is exactly the expectation that people have on them, society, their family, the church, their bishop, their colleagues or confreres has put on them. If I leave, I'm going to betray my confreres. If I leave, I'm going to betray my church. If I leave, I'm going to betray my family. If I leave, I'm going to betray all these congregations who have put their trust in me.
Right.
All right? And that, I think, it's a legitimate kind of feeling. But if you want to do a good job on yourself and helping other people, I think you have also to think about maybe God doesn't want you here. Maybe God can use you somewhere else. And so help the person to make a decision. To make a decision to be comfortable with the idea of, okay, maybe I need to look for something else. All right? Now, I'm not saying that every priest who come and talk to a counselor and say, I have difficulty with my priesthood, and I help him quit,
right.
take the door. No, I think this is where we need to be able to think and talk. And as counselors know how to do that, be empathic, and then help the priest leave that experience and come up with a decision that is going to be comfortable for himself and for others.
Let me switch gears just a little bit and talk about morality.
Okay.
You mentioned immoral kind of sexual behaviors before. I'm very aware when I sit with someone who's religious, whether it's a priest or just someone who's very Christian or even Jewish or other religions, someone who's very religious, that there are two lenses that I need to balance as I talk with them.
Yeah.
that first lens is the psychological lens or the counseling lens that I look through. So when I have a priest who comes in and talks about masturbation, I masturbate several times a week, I feel extremely guilty about it. My psychological counseling lens wants to reassure them that masturbation is a healthy, normal activity and that they shouldn't be bothered by it. Which is what we think a lot of times, is that we try to convince people about normal, healthy sexual behavior based on data and statistics and the what other people do. But then there's another lens that I'm very cognizant of as I sit with religious group people, which is the moral lens. And that what they're coming to me and saying is, this is not the person I want to be in God's eyes. That this is different than what I want for my life. And so how do you reconcile that in a counseling session? Certainly we have to meet the client where they are, and we all know that, but when they're engaging in a behavior that seems fairly normal, quote, ordinary, typical, yet they really struggle with it at a moral level, how do we deal with that?
Well, I think, I want to say it's the simplest thing, but I don't think it's the simplest kind of, you know, when you're using your psychological lens, one thing is motivating you, is that your care, your love for this person. Right. And the other way around also is, now, how do you make this person understand that he's dealing with a loving God, a caring God? You see, and that God created us human. All right. My psychological, your psychological lens would say, okay, don't bother about it. But that won't help him. What he wants to see from you is that when you're wearing that lens, you're doing it out of care and love for him. So much so, you care so much for him, you understand him, you love him so much, that you understand also where he's coming from in his moral thing. And that's where you bring the other aspect, you know, but you're dealing with a loving God. Now, maybe ask yourself, how are you kind of being in love to that God, or this God is not loving you that much when you do that. Now, and start talking about this God of love. This God of love maybe is telling you should not be doing it that much, but you think, really, that is noting all the time you've done it and say, okay, that's under firewood for you, that's under charcoal for you. At the end, you have this big stove of fire for you because hear what you did.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? We have to understand one thing, is that when it comes to morality in the Catholic Church, all right, especially when it revolves around sexuality, there has been a time when everything that revolves around sex is bad, is evil. So get away from it. But now, we are talking about, you know, John Paul II talked about the theology of the body, wrote books about it, wrote poems about it. Benedict just came out with not encyclical, but a publication on love, what love is, and again bring all these things into a new perspective, where sexuality become something that is a gift to God, from God, and sexuality also comprise the way I deal with my own body. That means the way I look at myself in the mirror and feel the urge to caress myself, to masturbate. All these come into play. Now, how do I put all this into the context of God being so loving to me, as you as a human person is trying to be loving to me and get me into a place where I feel good. I feel good about myself. I love myself. I accept myself. And not being burdened with guilt all the time. So, in one sense, you play your role as a psychologist who is there to help the person grow. On the other hand, you help that person understand also where he's coming from and the love that pertains, that surrounds all this.
So one of the things that struck me as you talked about this is we talked earlier about the need for priests to become, have a solid foundation, to become solid with themselves around their sexuality. What struck me as you were talking about this was, as a counselor who may be working with a priest, we need to be solid in our understanding of our own beliefs and morality and attitudes and values.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not only about our own sexuality, yeah, but what we think about religion.
Yes, and I will tell you one thing. One of the, and it has become a kind of an ethical obligation for us, is to be multiculturally competent when dealing with other population, right? And we know that when we talk about cultural group, we are talking not only of race or ethnicity or minority or majority or thing like that, but we are also talking about groups of people, the aging people, the gay and lesbian. And I would think, and each one has the adolescents is a culture in themselves, right. You see what I'm saying? So each culture in that sense, I've got their own norms, and we have to have the competency, the knowledge, the skill to work with this person, the understanding to work with them. And I think one of the things that can help, if, for example, we look at priests with the vows of celibacy, with their calling as priests, and the moral issues that surround them as a culture, and get into that with the same thing that cultural competency asks us, the awareness, the knowledge, and the skill to be able to work with them. And then, in that case, we don't become judgmental. We become multiculturally sensitive. We don't impose our views. I can still look, this, I like that metaphor. I can still look at this priest with my psychological lens, but still love that person and help that person to find in his own kind of, is in his own environment, his own calling, his own culture, the love that will help him grow.
Interesting, because as I heard you talking, it was really about, talking about God with priests. And my guess is there would be a lot of counselors who wouldn't be comfortable doing that.
Exactly.
Who wouldn't say, you know, there's a God who loves you, because somehow priests are supposed to know this. They're supposed to already understand this. So what good, here I am, just a lay person, doing counseling with somebody, and what do I have to teach theologically to a priest in a counseling session? Yet it does seem like there are some things there.
I don't think the moment you open your mouth and talk about God, you're doing theology. Hmm. Right? The moment you make a discourse on God, you're doing theology. I don't think you need to be a scholar in theology to be able to help that person. Now remember, if I am a priest, I come to you, it's because I know you've got something for me. I know you, I can trust you. You see, and even if it's not my choice, but my bishop has asked me to come and see you, it's because my bishop knows you've got something to do to help me, not to put me down, not to kind of make me feel bad, not to chastise me,
right,
but to help me grow. Grow as a priest, continue to grow as a priest, or continue to grow as a human person. Doesn't matter. But this is why we come to you. This is why. So you don't have to have this nice big discourse about God, but just kind of understand us from within. You know, there's one thing that maybe need to be addressed. You see, you might find lots of inconsistency in terms of morality, in terms of sexuality, lots of inconsistency when priests come to you. They might find excuses to justify the thing. And some of the excuses would say, well, I made a vows of celibacy, I didn't make a vows of chastity. I made a vows of chastity, I didn't make a vows of abstinence. I made a vows of abstinence, I didn't make a vows of chastity. All these kind of things go around and around. And I think they need to be challenged on that. They need, even if you as a counselor, you might say, well, I don't think people should be celibate. Maybe you don't believe in celibacy, but this is the life that this person has chosen. And as a counselor, as a psychologist, as a helper, you have the ability to help that person and challenge the person to be consistent. to know what's talking about, not to keep creating excuse. Know exactly what you're talking about when you talk about being called to celibacy. Know exactly what you're talking about when you're being called to abstinence. Know what you're talking about exactly when you're talking about being called to be chaste. Now, we can talk around and turn that around. I mean, it's a good, these three words, these three kind of concepts, it's kind of can become a very good way of getting your way through. And this is where you, as a counselor, need to be able to challenge people and be consistent, be coherent, and know what they, be congruent. You know, the whole genuine thing. Be congruent. Know what you're talking about and how you're living it. Because you don't, you can cheat me. You can cheat people. But if you believe that your calling is a calling from God, you can't cheat Him. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. I think it's interesting because I actually saw a priest one time, actually several times, who would use those words almost interchangeably to support whatever position. So I took a vow of celibacy, and celibacy, he would say, celibacy to me is not having sexual relations with a woman.
Hmm.
You know, that celibacy is that the sexual relationship between a man and a woman. So he was gay.
Uh-huh.
You know, and homosexuality aside in theological terms, what I saw was kind of this manipulation. Of the system.
Mm-hmm.
Which really created some incongruency for him that I think he wasn't even aware of how much he struggled.
Exactly.
I've had priests tell me that sex with children doesn't fall into
the
celibacy, chastity, abstinence kind of model. And so that's how they justified it. So let me just switch because we're probably wrapping up here not too much longer. I think it'd probably be remiss if we didn't talk for a second about the sex abuse issues in the church. What do you think about that? What's your take on all of this?
Well, I'm a priest, and I'm here to forgive people. But I have a hard time forgiving priests, or whoever professional, but since we are talking about this context, priests abusing kids. Because this is, again, a misuse of power. It's a kind of a destruction of trust. And there are books that have been written called The Destruction of Innocence, and we know the damage of any type of sexual abuse or any kind of abuse on children and how they grow up being people who are messed up and they become victims and later maybe repeating the same thing and they are more victims again. You see what I'm saying? So it's evil. It's evil. All right? The second thing that I have to say about that is I think the church has not helped. Because the church has remained silent so long. The church has tried to kind of protect her own image. And in doing so, had put herself in a situation where now that image has been shattered. All right? So, what do I think? I think that we need to be protective of our children. We need... I still think... the relationship between priest and parishioners should be a trust, a relation based on deep trust, but it's not a one-way traffic. If you come and trust me, I need to be able to make myself worthy of that trust. And if I don't, then I deserve the punishment that accompanies that.
So let me ask you this then: what about that priest that sits before you as a counselor, or you're a counselor and a priest is sitting before you, saying, "I have sexual interest in children. I'm sexually attracted to kids. What do I do?" What?
Well, you know what we do in that sense. If, for example, this is something that's happening, we have to report that stuff.
Sure, but mandated reporting aside.
Okay.
I'm coming to you saying I've never touched a child, I've never done anything, but the reality is I do have interest
here. Okay, my thing is, and that's me. I will do. We put the mandatory aside. I will do everything to help the guy understand that whatever action he's going to put forward on that, like follow up on that attraction, is going to be damaging for this kid, but then on him.
Right.
Okay? But my protection is first. So if after talking and having kind of trying to help her and help him understand the consequence of his action, and that don't blame it on anybody. Don't come and blame it saying that I was abused before, that's why I feel that. Okay? Then let's work on it. Let's work on dealing with that. But he has to know that the moment he puts action into his feelings and do something, it's going to be very damaging for that kid. It's something that he might not be able to live with, and somehow I will be responsible for making sure this doesn't happen.
So the answer isn't just pray more. The answer isn't just avoid children.
No.
The answer isn't let's find someplace else, you know. It sounds like you're saying the answer is more...
Prayer gave you the spiritual strength to kind of... to maybe stay grounded. Maybe not to act upon your desire or something like that. But we need also real protection.
Right.
We need also. Right. Genuine, because... Or else, then we become like we become people who are opinionated. Like, well, let's take prayer and everything is going to be okay. But we need to take action also. That's also the part of the incarnation thing. God didn't just say, "Okay, I saved the world by clicking of a finger." No, He came down and took a cross and walked the walk, not only talked the talk.
And I think part of what you're saying in all of this is once we can assure that safety for a child, and this is probably getting my own opinion, my own beliefs into this, but that we have to figure out a way to develop empathy for someone who's made the connection. You know, we talked earlier in the interview about the disconnect.
Yes.
And how important it is to get counselors to help priests, since
yes.
that's our topic today, make a connection yes. with their sexuality.
Yes.
What I think I've seen in the past, and you can comment on this if you want, is that when priests have made the connection with their sexuality and come forward and are honest, we kick them out of the system. We say they're unworthy of treatment. We don't find that level of empathy. And yet what we're encouraging is for counselors to make the connection. Mm-hmm. Then when they make the connection, we make them the black sheep. And
here's one other thing. I like that because that's a church, okay? On one hand, overprotective. On the other hand, very reactive. Okay? So from one extreme to the other. Okay, from one extreme to the other. Before, when we were able to put things under the table, then we protect. We put more tablecloth on that. We put more shield around.
Right.
Now that it's become to the open, there's a breach into that security thing. Now we do all the opposite now. Oh, we are the first one to defend.
Right.
So the first person who mentioned thing, kick out.
Right.
I think what you're saying, yes, empathy is needed. We need empathy, we need to understand. When priests make that connection though, there must be a genuine, and that's where as a colleague, as a friend, as a confrere, I can't discern that. They need somebody else outside of the realm of the priest priestly context, like a psychologist, like a counselor, who can help this person look at this problem and see whether you made the connection, that's good and fine, but are you ready to go all the way? That means if you have to go to rehabilitation, go to rehabilitation.
Right.
If you have to be taken away from whatever, you do it.
Right.
Take the means to do it.
Well, as we kind of wrap up our interview, and it's been wonderful to talk to you about these things, what do you have any words of advice or words of wisdom, any last thoughts on if a counselor is working with a priest who comes for a variety of sexual issues? I don't want to focus just on the child issue. It's what we ended with. But if they come to them with a variety of sexual issues, what kinds of thoughts would you have for them as they work with a priest in that?
Well, I think they will have to have the courage of addressing issues clearly and honestly as possible. You see, and that to kind of make sure, especially if you're a Catholic and I'm a Catholic priest coming to you. Now, as a Catholic, you have expectation for how you see priests, you priest. If you can kind of suspend that for a moment and deal in a very professional way. This is what you are called to be, a counselor. This is who am I called to be, a priest. Now, I'm struggling with that. Help me out. So the only way you can do that is to put your professional hat on you. So and don't beat around the bush. Don't kind of say, this is father. No. This is a human person struggling to survive in his vocation. This is a human person who has to be in touch with his humanity, with his sexuality, with his fragility, with his weaknesses and limitations. And you are the person who can do that unless you are not genuine at all. Unless you just want to kind of be buddy-buddy and... No. You need to challenge him and go to the core. And as I said, you don't need to be a master in theology to know what you have to talk about. You're a master in helping a human person.
I think those are wonderful words of advice and counsel for people who are going to work in this area. Dr. Father Gregoire, thank you very much
for
allowing me to interview. This is David Delmonico at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with Dr. Jocelyn Gregoire talking about priests and sexuality in a counseling relationship.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Father Jocelyn Gregoire of Duquesne University regarding priests and sexuality.
Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.